This is Raisa McLeod from CKUT 90.3 FM. You're listening to Off the Hour. I'm here with Kevin Page, the Parliamentary Budget Officer. They have been very busy this year, and in December they published two reports. But first off, I mean, this is a part of government that isn't very well known. So Kevin, Mr. Page, could you please tell us, what does the Parliamentary Budget Officer do?
Raisa, Parliamentary Budget Officer, where this is a new position, the Parliamentary Budget Office. It was created in the, through the Accountability Act in 2006. And our mandate, which is in the Act of Parliament, is to provide independent analysis to the legislature, to Parliament, on the economy and the trends in the economy and the nation's finances, scrutiny of the estimates and costing. And we have a relationship that's defined in the Act of Parliament to three parliamentary committees, but we can speak to others, but to the House and Senate Finance Committees and the Public Accounts Committee.
So how do they assure that you guys keep your independence? Because what if you say something and the finance minister is not happy with what you say? How do you assure some type of that you guys don't, that there's no backlash?
Well, I mean, we don't. I mean, there's often in the work that we do, which is again different than the work that the Auditor General do. We're looking more to the future. We're looking at the planning framework for the government from an economic and fiscal perspective. We're looking at costing of legislation that hasn't been implemented yet. It's quite common actually to have debate and friction. And different numbers, and this is a good thing when you're doing front-end financial due diligence. So we see it more as a positive than a negative when there is debate and positive friction that leads to more scrutiny of finances at the front end before we actually make a decision. So it's not something we shy away from. And how do we protect our independence? Well, I think it's the onus is on me to make sure that our work is free from political or bureaucratic bias.
Okay, well then, so talking about that debate right now, there is some friction between you and the finance minister, according to your publication called A Comparison of Finance Canada and PBO Estimates of the Government of Canada Structural Budget Balance. There is a $10 billion difference. First of all, I don't even know what a structural budget is, so
yes.
Could you explain that?
Well, when economists or policymakers, when they when they're working behind the scenes, supporting ministers of finance, the prime minister, in the preparation of a budget, they will use tools. And for economists, we look at where the economy should be if it was operating at its potential. We'll look at where the economy is estimated to be, which could be above or below its a potential economic level. We'll look at fiscal balances, and we'll try to, using that type of analysis, we'll try to see how much of our deficit that we have now is cyclical versus structural. And we'll look at other tools as well, but in the context of whether a deficit is cyclical or structural, it's important for ministers of finance and actually for parliamentarians to know whether this deficit is one versus the other. If the deficit is largely cyclical, then we know as the economy recovers, as your kind of economy deals with experiencing a recession, as it recovers through the economic recovery period, that most of that deficit, or that deficit, if it's all cyclical, will disappear as the economy gets back to its potential output level. Now, if the deficit is structural, which means we have even as the economy gets back to its potential, we're operating below our potential output level now in Canada because of the 2008 recession, we'll still have a deficit. And we're saying right now at my office, and we publish our methodologies and we publish estimates going forward on what this balance looks like, we're saying that there is a structural component to our deficit. And without further austerity measures, either cutting spending or the rate of growth of spending or cutting or increasing taxes, that you'll still have a deficit even as Canada's economy gets back to potential, which we're estimating will be till perhaps as late as 2016-17. So a structural deficit, again, or structural budget balance, is what would be the fiscal balance when the economy is operating where all policymakers want it to be, which is at Canada's potential output level, which usually means in labor market terms that you have an unemployment rate below 6%, that capital is more or less fully employed, so that our industries are operating at high capacity utilization.
Okay. Just to remind everybody, capital in economic terms means people and citizens. Is that
it can
correct?
mean citizens. There's human capital, but it could also be physical capital as well. You know, machinery and equipment, other non-residential, residential types of infrastructure as well.
Oh, I didn't know that. Well, we're always learning something here. So you're saying that either the government presently has to either raise taxes or do more budget cuts. But isn't there always a concern when you do more budget cuts that that's going to affect the economy, right? Because most of the time when you're in a, if I understand correctly, a cyclical low, government spending sometimes has to go up in order to stimulate the economy.
That's right. That's right. This is a very good point. And highlights why it's important to know and have a view and actually to share that view with Parliament and Canadians on what is the nature of our fiscal balance problem. Is it cyclical or structural? We're saying it's probably 60%, right now, cyclical, 40% structural. So most of this deficit is disappearing as we're seeing it disappear. Our deficit in Canada at the federal level peaked in 2009-10, kind of the worst period of that recession. It peaked at, roughly $55 billion. And we had a stimulus package, which is, again, I think speaks to your point. Well, in the cyclical low, it's actually a good thing sometimes for the economy, for a government to actually try to stimulate demand, put money into infrastructure, social programming, et cetera, that money that will get spent while demand is very weak. So we had a stimulus package in 2009 and 2010 and 2011, we saw our deficit decline even in 2010-11 to about $34-35 billion, even though we had a stimulus package, and it was declining because a lot of that deficit was cyclical and the economy started to recover. And so this raises the issue: what will be the economic outlook going forward? But as and we're in this period of sort of sustained weakness because of this global nature of this financial crisis that we're experiencing. So we know for an extended period of time we'll deal with sluggish growth. So then it raises the question: do we need more stimulus, less stimulus? What would be the nature of that kind of stimulus package if you were to design one? We have a government right now that says we should restrain the rate of growth of spending. And that will help, reduce what we think is the structural deficit. But they're doing it in a relatively modest way. In the 2012 budget, they committed to find an extra $4 billion. In 2014-15, if you think about $4 billion, we have, at the federal, right now, at the federal government level, we spend roughly $250 billion. So it's a relatively small amount of money. So it's modest stimulus. Modest austerity, but it is taking place in a time when demand is relatively weak, when the economy is operating well below its potential.
Okay, I think you lost me there. So right now we've got austerity measures, but at the same time we've got which means cutbacks, right? But at the same time we do have a $4 billion stimulus package coming in 2012.
Well, it's a $4 billion austerity package, so it's a spending cut package that the government is committed to introduce in its 2012 budget. We haven't seen the details yet. That will take place over the three following years. And, again, we're waiting to see the details in the 2012 budget. So the government is expressed concern about these deficits that we have right now. And we find it a little bit odd because I think speaks to why we wrote the note, because when we look at what estimates are provided by the government, they don't provide forward-looking estimates of this structural budget balance. Is it cyclical? Is it structural? They provide historical numbers, and the historical numbers would suggest in 2010 that the entire deficit was cyclical. So there was no structural component to it, which raises the question, if it's all cyclical, why do we need more austerity measures, including like the $4 billion worth of austerity that they're planning to announce in the 2012 budget? Or just a little over a week ago, the government also committed in a longer-term sense to reduce the rate of growth of spending for the Canada Health Transfer, which goes to provinces to deal with health issues.
Okay. So from what I understand, if we have a cyclical issue here, and now we know that the crisis isn't really linked to Canadian economy, but to the global economy, shouldn't the Canadian government be more concerned with helping out the global crisis? So all these packages, I mean, I think that seems to be the main concern, that everybody has to get together to deal with what's happening on a global level.
Well, I think you're right. I think in 2009-10, 2010-11, the International Monetary Fund was encouraging all countries to provide, government level, to provide stimulus because of the weak demand in the global economy after the financial collapse in 2008. And so the Canadian government came up with a relatively rich, you know, fiscal stimulus package. And you know, the government at the time, when it implemented, said it would be temporary and targeted. And so it was a two-year kind of program, in which so now that program has come off, and we're kind of, you know, there is an impact on the economy, removing some of the stimulus that was there the past 2 years. We're still dealing with a relatively weak economy. I think for a lot of countries now, particularly in Europe, that after, you know, these stimulus packages that they introduce, some are even more modest than ones that Canada introduced a few years ago, they're not in a fiscal position to provide additional stimulus. I mean, the bond markets have been quite tough on some of these countries, particularly southern European countries. They've raised, put upward pressure on bond interest rates, bond yields. So they're not really in a position to stimulate demand, which puts, you know, it creates a bit of a quagmire for policymakers. They, you know, we do need stimulus, but in some, for a number of countries, because their debt loads are much higher, particularly in Canada, they're not in a position. I mean, Canada is talking now. We've seen recent reports of Minister Flaherty willing to provide additional resources to the International Monetary Fund, which could provide additional support to some of the struggling countries in Europe that are dealing with sovereign debt issues.
Okay. This is a question that's always been bugging me. Why are we so focused always on economic growth? I mean, I know there is a certain amount of economic growth which is linked to population growth, and this comes into the debate of sustainability versus growth. I mean, can the growth, I mean, this is, I guess, a theoretical or a philosophical question, is do we always need continued growth, and why can't we just have a sustainable type of market?
Well, I think it's important to look at, you know, what, you know, it's important to have estimates. We provide estimates what we think is, you know, sustainable type growth based on, you know, the kind of labor input and how our labor input in Canada will evolve over time. Of course, sustainability also means, you know, has other implications in terms of that go beyond the kind of sustainability issues we've, you know, in recent years. There's been a lot of talk about bubbles in economies, housing bubbles and equity stock market bubbles, and which are not sustainable. But there's, of course, also a big discussion that was taking place in the last few weeks on the environment, which brings in, you know, the issue of sustainability in a different context, which is important as well. So, but I mean, I think growth, to the extent that we can create growth that creates wealth that allows us all, you know, to raise our standard of living, is deemed to be a good thing, so we could provide more resources for positive things like, you know, like health, like education. And so I think there are certainly positive aspects to growth. And right now, with economies being relatively sluggish, particularly in the United States, where their labor markets are much weaker than Canada, they're looking at unemployment. Their unemployment rate is about 8.6%. Ours is 7.4%. But they have, you know, they've had unemployment durations that are much longer than Canada's. They're hoping in the United States that they could, you know, they could revive economic growth much higher than what it is right now.
Okay, so my final question, I guess, is the $10 billion difference between your structural budget and the Parliament's structural budget something to be concerned about? Is $10 billion a lot of money in terms of our overall budget?
Well, $10 billion in terms of, I think there's a, you know, going back to your original question, raising what is, you know, why do we need a parliamentary budget office? And I think one of the things that we try to do is promote fiscal transparency, to promote the use of financial analysis around, you know, decision making, including setting fiscal policy targets, et cetera. So, I mean, one thing, when we put out our note a few weeks back on this difference, this gap between our estimates and finance estimates, it was really to try to get the Department of Finance to become more transparent on their numbers. But they're not providing any numbers going forward on, you know, the nature of our fiscal balance problem. And they're taking decisions, but they're not providing what we think is kind of an appropriate economic and fiscal context. So, I mean, $10 billion is important. It's not an insignificant number relative to how much the federal government spends or takes in terms of revenues. I mean, $10 billion, we're an economy roughly of $1.7 trillion, not even insignificant in the context of how big our economy is. So it's a large number. It's certainly large relative to how our numbers were tracking historically. So, basically what we're saying through the note is, you know, Department of Finance Minister Flaherty, come clean, you know, with Parliament, provide these estimates on a go-forward basis, explain your methodology. We will reconcile our numbers with your numbers once we can see your methodology. They have not published their papers. So then I think it really didn't, then it becomes the context, which is, then we're in a better position to have a better debate, because we want parliamentarians to have debates around priorities and policy directions. So with better quality analysis and supporting that debate, I think we can get better decisions. And in this context is, again, how much of our deficit is cyclical or structural? We're saying there is a structural component. They're saying it's all cyclical. But if there's, we don't understand their numbers, and we find it odd, one of the things we highlighted in the note, saying if the deficit is all cyclical, that means the economy in Canada is a lot weaker than even we think it is relative to its potential level. So there's other issues besides that, which probably would raise more to your point, well, maybe we need more stimulus. So I think it's important that the Minister of Finance and the Department of Finance come clean with their numbers, their analysis behind their numbers as well.
Okay. Well, thank you on that first part. This, now we have the second publication that you just published yesterday, which is Revenue Impacts Arising from Tax Adjustments 2012. And it just seems to be a rough estimate of each revenue stream of the Government of Canada. Is that
correct?
Accurate?
Yeah, in the work that we do, Razor, we do different types of work. As the Parliamentary Budget Office, we take a lot of requests from parliamentarians for, costing. For example, we've costed fighter planes, we're costing crime legislation, we have costed crime legislation. We've done work on costing Aboriginal educational infrastructure, G80-20 summits. All those types of requests have actually been generated by requests from parliamentarians. There's also work that we do that we don't wait, actually, for parliamentarians to ask us for. We say, we're in a position to provide you information. We'll bring this forward to you. And the note that we released a few days ago deals with, on the tax system per se, if we were to make changes to brackets or rates, income brackets that support the personal income tax system or rates, or including the goods and services tax rate, or including the corporate income tax rate, what impact would it have on federal finances? And we do sometimes we get requests just over the phone from parliamentarians saying, well, how much does a 1 point cost on the goods and service tax? So we thought it's handy using the kind of methodologies which are similar to used by the Department of Finance, provide these sort of rules of thumb, what would be the fiscal impact of tax changes, changing rates or brackets. So, again, it's more foundational work in our sense that helps parliamentarians when they're looking at potentially providing counter proposals in a budgetary context to provide their own cost estimates.
Well, that's very useful, and I guess it would be useful also for the media to use when they're looking at...
Correct.
At how these tax changes really cost in terms of revenue stream. And also for, I guess, citizens can always look at it. All the information is on your website. I did have one other question, because this was a debate that was raging on CKUT about Bill C-10, and how much does it actually cost? Will Bill C-10 cost the country? And I do recall you guys, you mentioned that you do estimates about crime bills. What did you guys come up with?
Well, we're going to release some work early in the new year, a couple of papers that relate to various aspects of C-10. One will be on, the impact, fiscal impact of changes to conditional sentencing. The other will be on changes to the mandatory minimums. We've done some work in the past, which is also relevant. We looked at the costing of the Truth in Sentencing Act, which changes how we do remand in the criminal justice system now. When we did that, which we think is probably fiscally the most material of the changes of all the tough-on-crime legislation brought forward by the current government. And that work that we did, I think it was released in 2009, it showed that, if you assume kind of the same occupancy rates in our correctional services systems at the federal level, that, we would need to build additional facilities to accommodate an influx of thousands of additional inmates, and with longer periods of duration, you're probably looking upwards at the federal level of about $1 billion a year. And we thought the cost would be similar, actually, at the provincial level. Now, the costs of C-10, which are different, we think are less fiscally material, but I think the paper that we'll release in January will show that, at least with conditional sentencing, that their cost is almost entirely provincial, not federal. So there are some very important fiscal federalism impacts with respect to the tough on crime legislation.
Well, I guess that would explain why some provinces said they will not support this bill or pay for it, because it's affecting their budgets, and they would like to see, I guess they would want to have the federal government give them money to support these.
Yeah, we're not surprised that the budget office, the parliamentary budget office, the provinces are raising this as a significant issue. We think, again, it highlights why we need more fiscal transparency, why when these bills are produced that estimates are provided by the government on what the cost would be, that they provide their methodologies. And if there's going to be impacts on other levels of government, they should also be highlighted as well. So we think that's it's not a good thing that we've just experienced with respect to the tough on crime legislation. We hope that, we're going to be releasing our work early in the new year with respect to C-10. But we think still fundamentally, when we look at overall the tough on crime legislation, that the most fiscally material one, which will have impacts both at the federal and provincial level, would be the changes to the remand system, which was in the Truth in Sentencing Act, which is already law now.
Okay. Well, I have one final question. Do you guys accept citizen requests?
Well, right now we're a very small office. We have a very large mandate, and we work for Parliament, so we're not really in a position, to take requests directly from citizens. We're just sort of not funded that way. But we do get emails every day from citizens, and we try to respond quickly to their requests. There's usually requests around understanding, trying to understand numbers better. So, and we encourage that. We find that with the interactions that we've had with citizens, that we've learned a lot, and it helps us, for us to focus our work and better understand the priorities of citizens too. So, we work for Parliament. Parliament works for Canadians. So we can't take requests directly from citizens, and fundamentally, but obviously. The way our system should work is citizens should take these issues to parliamentarians. Parliamentarians should take these, send the parliamentary budget officer a request for a costing analysis on an issue. Then we can undertake the work. We could prioritize it appropriately. So, but yeah, we enjoy emails. We get them every day from Canadians, and for to your viewers, keep them coming because we learn from this interaction.
Well, that's great. Can you please tell us your website?
Yeah, our website, our website is actually, we have a Parliamentary Budget Office website that they can go to the Parliament of Canada, and they can find PBO located there. They can see all the papers that we've done too. So, get information on our operating model, etc. But if they want to email me directly, it's pageK@parl.gc.ca, and I look forward to these emails.
Well, thank you, Kevin Page, and have a good Christmas. Merry Christmas and Happy New Year.
The same to you. Thank you very much, Reza.